Okay, so let's talk about the case which you mentioned at the end of the shiur last week. We have a girl who has unfortunately been divorced from her first husband, and she's looking for a second husband. Her father knows that it won't be easy. So he puts up an offer that whoever marries his daughter, he will buy an apartment and put that apartment in half the chosen's name, and half will be in his daughter's name. Lo and behold, we are able to find a chosen. A chosen hadn't yet been married before. A bocha, a bachelor, up to now. And he married the daughter, and the father bought her apartment and put half the apartment in that person's name. Call him Reuven. 2 years later, the marriage breaks up. There is a get, and now we're in business. What are the claims? The daughter is claiming, and in the meantime, the father has been nifter, and the daughter is claiming that my father, when he gave over half the apartment, he expected the marriage to last. It didn't last, so therefore you have to give it back. The chosen is claiming, what do you mean? I got a present. Once you give a present, you don't give it back. That's fine. First counter timer. Second counter timer. And even if you're supposed to give it back, well, who are you supposed to give it back to? To you? You're supposed to give it back to the father. And the father's not around, then who do you give it to? Who's the one to inherit the father? In such a case. The sons. So therefore, I don't have to answer you in Beis Din. So the question we're looking at now is...
Was there a halachic will?
No halachic will. Now, the question we're looking at now is like this. We know that, what's the halacha? If the husband gives his wife presents, are they presents, and they consider halachically presents, what we've learnt up to now? No, Sammy, what do you say? We learnt, they are considered presents. Yeah? If you give, the husband gives jewellery to his wife, what they considered?
Here's a gift.
They're giving a temporary gift. In the event a marriage breaks up, then you have to give it back, as we learnt. So jewellery is the exception. All other presents a husband gives his wife are proper presents. They belong to his wife. Except for jewellery. Jewellery are, you can have them while we're married. When this marriage breaks up, then there's no more jewellery. You have to give it back to me or the estate.
Except for clothes, he gets the money back.
Yes, and the clothes also, but it's slightly different. Now, the question is, is a house of a present of half a house comparable to jewellery, where we say you get it back, the estate gets it back when the marriage breaks up, or is it comparable to the other presents where once they've been given, they're always given? That's, once the present's been given, it's always given. You used to give somebody a present. They were your best friend, you give them a present. 2 weeks later, they end up being no longer your friends. You don't get your present back, right? Just because they're no longer your friend. Once they're given, it's given. So do we look at a house being given over to the husband in half his name, meaning as a present, or do we look at it like jewellery that gets it back once the marriage breaks up? How do we define a house? Now, you tell me, what do you think a house is comparable to, the category of jewellery or the category of other presents?
I would say it's not like...
Jewellery, you say. Sammy says jewellery. Why would you say jewellery?
Let's say not the father buying, the husband can buy a house, or the husband his wife's name. Why is he? Well, he's buying a house, he can give her a house, he can give her a house to live in. I mean, jewellery, you can't give him a house, he can give her a house.
Okay.
There are two reasons why I say it's not like jewelry. First of all, dealing with Dvarim Shebalei, so you need a very strong umdana to overcome Dvarim Shebalei.
Okay.
And I don't see that here. I don't even see it by jewelry, but at least that is a lefesh. But here I certainly don't see it. Secondly, his motivation was to get his daughter married off. If he would have stipulated you only get to keep it if the marriage goes through, he's going to have a big problem. And so he probably was mosered al-das that the guy can keep it.
Okay. Very good. So we have two opinions here. Now.
Five people and two opinions.
Two opinions. Now, the question is like this. So this question was, this actually did terrible place in the based in Rabboni, where Rabbi Yashiv was sitting at the time. So Rabbi Yashiv said like this. He says, look, let's look. There's a swar to say that when we're talking about husbands, there's two categories. Husband sometimes gives presents for his wife to keep, and sometimes he gives presents that he expects to get back. When does he get it back? Well, jewelry. Of course, he's not really giving her presents. He really just wants to look at the jewelry. That's why he doesn't want it to be a permanent present by jewelry. That's all by husbands. When somebody else gives the presents, let's say the father of the kala gives a present to the chosin, or the father of the chosin gives a present to the kala, there's room to learn that why they're giving presents. Why they're giving presents, some stranger, to the who's not really, doesn't know the kala so well. Why is he giving a present?
Social obligation.
Because, not social obligation, because, who? Why do you think he's giving a present? Father of the kala giving a present to the chosin?
Father?
Because?
No?
No, he wants his daughter to get married.
Because he relates to it, because you have a relationship with my wife, therefore I want to give you a present.
I want to be a nice guy.
Yeah, because you have a relationship with my wife. So there's room to say that when father of the kala brings presents to chosin, then for sure it's only because of the marriage union. Because my only relationship to you is because of my daughter. If you don't have my daughter, then you don't have the relationship, and therefore I won't give this present. So therefore it's a clear umdana, all presents that a father kala gives to the chosin will be understood as it's because of marriage. No marriage, no presents. There's room to learn like that.
Well, I understand that, but does that mean that it's an umdana, as a marriage terminates, I take the present?
Yes.
Back?
With the husband, we say he's got a relationship like a friend to him. Yes? So therefore, just as you give a friend a present, you don't get it back just because he's no longer your friend. So also your wife. So we say for all presents, husband is the wife, he doesn't get it back. Except for jewelry, we have a special swara, he just wants to look at the jewelry. But with somebody else who's a stranger really to the chosin, he gives a present, it's only because of you have a connection with my family called my daughter. Therefore, the presence is obvious, it's only given as kama you're still connected to my daughter. Right. So therefore, there's room to learn that all presents that are given by family of one side automatically come back when the marriage is terminated. Unlike husbands, where we say they basically stay with the wife except for jewelry. So there's room to say that.
Why is ceasing to be a friend different than ceasing to be a spouse?
Because a friend is because of my friendship I'm giving it. Yeah. Whereas the spouse is, I don't know you at all. I haven't got a friend relationship. I own my relationship. My reason I'm giving this is because I've got my daughter, and you have a connection to my daughter. I'm giving it because of the connection of my daughter. There's no connection, there's no giving.
Yeah.
Yes. So therefore, there's room to say that. Says Rabbi Yashiv. So what way do you look? It says there's a beferish shulchan aruch, not like that. We look at the first Maramokka. Dafke she'osin lo bal. Dafke, if the husband gives a present of jewelry, do we say gets back? Avu acherim she'nosin lo tachshitin b'shas nusuin. But if one of the side's family gives jewelry to, at the time of marriage, the matonu gemura nisgavnu, we say that's a proper present. They belong to her. So says the Rivosh, which the Ramah brings down in Shulchan Aruch, that if the father of the chosin gives jewelry to his kala, to the daughter-in-law, we look as a proper present, and that doesn't come back. So Rabbi Yashu says, forget, we see from here that with the husbands, all the presents are considered presents, except for jewelry, where it gets back. But with strangers, meaning that the father of the chosen gives jewelry to the daughter-in-law, even jewelry doesn't come back when it's considered like a present. So we see, not like the svara which we floated just a few minutes ago, we're seeing that once the father-in-law gives a present, it's a permanent present, it doesn't come back. That's what we see, says Rabbi Yashu. So here, who was in here, says Rabbi Yashu. In this case, who gave the house? The father of the kala. He gave it to the chosen. Therefore, under the Shulchan Aruch principle, it is a permanent present, and therefore there's no way, even if the marriage terminates, that present goes back. The house will not go back, it stays with the chosen. That's what Rabbi Yashu wanted the paskin in Basel. The other Dayonim who were sitting with Rabbi Yashu wanted to argue. And they said, it's not similar, the case of the Shulchan Aruch, which is talking about giving jewelry to the kala, to the case of the house where the father-in-law is giving a half the house to the chosen. Why would you think it's not similar? You tell me. These Dayonim want to argue with Rabbi Yashu and say it's not comparable to the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says that if you give jewelry to your daughter-in-law, you don't get it back. But you, Rabbi Yashu, want to say that also if you give a house to your son-in-law, you also don't get it back. Says these other Dayonim of Goldschmidt and Mizulati, who also Dayonim on the base of Magotul at the time, says it's not similar. Why is it not similar? You tell me. Why giving a house by the father-in-law is not similar to giving the father-in-law giving jewelry? It's a bribe, okay.
I think I call it extortion.
When he's given the house,
yes,
he's clearly the reasoning behind it is there's a connection between the two. He's giving the two together. When he's giving the father-in-law giving the jewelry to the wife, that's just the present to the wife. It's nothing to do with the husband. So that's just.
Very good.
Giving the house in both their
names. Everybody
things,
agrees. Everybody has anything else to add?
Very good.
The Dayan say, Rabbi Yashiv, it's not the same. The case of Shulchan Aruch, the father-in-law gives to the Kala jewelry. Who's going to use the jewelry? There's only one person who's going to use the jewelry when he gives it to her. Only her. The chosen's not going to put on the jewelry. Yeah.
Enjoy
it's not going to put on the jewellery, so that for sure, that's what the Shulchan Aruch means, that the father-in-law gives to his kala, the daughter-in-law, jewellery, that's a permanent present, doesn't get it. But when you give a house to the chosen, who's going to use that house? Just the chosen? Just the chosen's going to use the house? When I give it to the chosen, the son-in-law, the house, who's going to use it? Just the son-in-law? No, my daughter's also going to use it. So therefore, maybe, over there, that's not compared to the Shulchan Aruch. That type of present is not clearly just given to one party. It's given over to both parties to use, and one of those parties happens to be my daughter. Therefore, maybe that present will come back when the marriage is terminated. Okay. So let us, Mavara, what is there, that halakha true which we did, that chilik we said between giving a present which is only used by one party, that's for sure a permanent present, to a present which can be used by both parties, where I'm suggesting that's different. Let's look at number two, the Mabit. The Mabit brings down in two tshuvas he talks about this. One in Simon Pei, and one in Simon Chof Tes. Says like this. If you give a present which can be used by both parties, he says, Masha Nosin Afila Kurivasea, if the father of the Kala gives presents to the family, Imu klish mishtamshim baba bias, if it's a type of object which is used by the household, by both parties, who's shalom? It belongs to the son-in-law. So we see from this first truth of the Marbitz that even when the present is something by used by both parties, it still belongs to the son-in-law and it doesn't come back. Says another truth of the Marbitz, very strange. He says over here, Dovah Shemeshamish Lishnehem, a present which is given to the parties which can be used by both parties. V'nosen kach stam Lishnehem, and is given to both of them. Imhu Mekrovia Kala, if it's the family of the Kala, of the daughter, Nirish Chazal Kala, when the marriage breaks up, it goes back to the Kala. Vimhu Mekrovia Chosen, and if it's the family of Chosen, Hein Shalom, then it belongs to the Chosen. So what's going on over here? What's going on? The Chasam Sofer asks that the Marbitz himself is contradicting himself. One tshuva, he says, a present that's given to the household, that's used by the household, belongs to the Chosim. In the other tshuva, he says, a present that's given to the household, that belongs to, is given over to the household for both parties to use, then it goes back to the family that gave it when that marriage breaks up. How do we rectify this stira in the Marbitz? That's the Chasam Sofer's question. Now, I'll give you 5 seconds to think of the answer which the Chasam Sofer himself wrote, why there's no contradiction between one tshuva of the Marbitz and the other. And the clue is in the words which you just read of the Marbitz. What's the difference between the first case of the Marbitz and the second case of the Marbitz?
First case, anyone could have given them that son.
Yes. The first case. Are you saying that's a different case? Okay. You're saying it's a different case. It says in the first case, Krovaseha. So that's not true. Very good, but not true. Yes? Ah. You're right, that is the answer. Now explain what that means. Yes. Very good, very good, very good. Excellent. That's the Chasam Sofer's answer. And we'll explain it with an actual example of the two types of presents. We'll read the Chasam Sofer inside and we'll explain it. Okay. The Chasam Sofer says, I think. Nearly the low Chasam is. Yeah, it's low Chasam. Even although both parties use it. In the first case of the Mabi, it's not called that, but it's used by both parties. Because even tables and chairs and plates are considered that it's, both of them use it, both of them use the plate and the table, but a table that's given, a chair and a table and plates and pots and pans and spoons and knives, those are types of presents that even though both parties use it, but what people call it, it belongs to the house. These are items of the house. And since the household items belong to the husbands. Because he is in charge of the house, he's the boss of the house, and you give him a present of a household item, that even though both parties use it, but since it's called a household item, it belongs to him. It's considered a present to him, because he's the house, even though she's using it, but he's the house, it's a household item. So even though the family of the bride gave the chair to the house, and though the chos and the kala are going to use it, but it belongs to the chos and he never has to give it back, even if the marriage is terminated, because it's a household item and he's the house. Ach, b'simen chotes, but in the other case of the mapit, they're not talking about presents which are household items, they're talking about specific items which are used personally, personal items. Kagon, for example, tabas, a ring. It's not a household item, a ring. It's a ring. That she can put it on her finger, and the chosan can also put it on his finger. It's an item which both parties can use, but it's not a household item. It's a personal item which both parties can use. That type of present, the halacha is, it goes back to whoever family gave it if the event, the marriage is terminated. So what do we see from here? We see from here, says Rav Zlotzi, that an item, that's a personal item, that's given for both parties to use, goes back when that marriage is terminated. If it's a household item, then it stays with the husband. But if it's a personal item which both parties can use, then it does go back. That's what comes out in the Mabit. Now let me ask you a question. Over here. When the father of the Kana gave the house to the Chosan and put it in his name, is that defined? That's an item, obviously a house is an item which is used by both parties. But is that called a household item and therefore it never comes back, even though it's used by both parties? Or is it called a personal item which goes back to the family that gave it in the event that a marriage is terminated? How would you classify, in which category would you classify a house that's given over to the couple? Is it like the ring which goes back to the family which gave it in the event that marriage is terminated? Or is it like the table, chairs and plates and spoons which are household items which don't go back even in the event that marriage is terminated? How would you look at a house?
If you're using the sword, the chasen sofer, he specifically put it in both hands. So how can you say it's nikra al shemo?
It's what are you saying, even?
The Sfar of the Chacham Sofer is that the reason a household item is belonging to the husband is because it's Nikra al Shemo.
It's called his.
Right.
Yes.
But here the father specifically put it in both names, so by definition it's not Nikra al Shemo.
So, therefore, what are you suggesting?
That it should be not like the...
So it's like a ring.
Right.
Like a ring, and it goes back to the family who gave it. That's what you're suggesting.
Based on just this consideration. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. In recorded in the land registry, half belonging to the daughter and half belonging to the chosan. Marriage breaks up and we want to know, does that house go back? That was given half to the chosan. Because the father of the kala gave it. Is that called an item which is used by both parties? Correct, that's definitely. But is that in the category of a ring which goes back when the marriage is terminated? Or is it in the category of the table and chairs which don't go back?
If the household items are called al shmo, then kol shekin, the house is called al shmo.
Yeah, that's what I would just say.
Well, they don't put house.
Half the house is actually registered under his name. That's no more. That's elochol gadol.
The half is under his name.
Under his name.
The half is under his name.
It is, with half of it
the
is
under his name.
So you're now changing your minds, and you're saying it's like a household item because it's called his. He actually wrote it in his name, and for sure that doesn't go back. That's what you're suggesting. Yeah? Anyone has different suggestions over here to throw out?
The woman gives the house the character, the name. She has a much bigger contributing factor than just using a frying pan. She's building it, she's creating it. So
okay. Eric, this is your first time tonight. Welcome.
He's only saying that.
Have you got something to say?
So there's a the difference between the house and either of those two things.
It's not comparable to either one. That's a typical answer from you. And I would like an explanation.
You give somebody a present, whether it's a ring or whether it's a table, you give them a present. They start signing documents bringing their own ownership of property. How about a different character? Ownership, putting in their names, registering, signed documents.
So therefore, what you're assessing the result of that character difference should mean?
According to the documents, according to the style.
So you're agreeing to them, yes. You like to say you don't agree, but you're agreeing to them. Both parties over here. That it doesn't go back. Yeah, it stays where the name is.
It doesn't go back. I'm saying it doesn't go back. It's not because it's like a table. It's because it's registered in their name.
They're saying it's more than a table. They're saying like you. That's a table. The table's called his, and you said, of course it's his because it's registered in his name.
That's half his and half his.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. So, with Lotzi, what's the Taina that it's like the ring? The case of the ring. Why?
They got big fingers.
So the story is like this. A house, when you give a house over, you're giving over, my daughter's getting married, the father's going to live there, they're going to live together, they should get a house, but I don't give the house. Yeah, I'll give the house, and I'll give half the house, I put the half, register half the house in the name of the hospital. Is that a personal item, or a household item? For sure, you'll define a house as a big presence, yeah? Define it. It's not that it's being toffle to anything. It's not like it's secondary to some nature to something else. Yeah, you give a table to the house. It's for the house use. Who's called the house? Yeah, the house is called. Who's over it? The owner of the house. The husband's the owner of the house. You give a table to the house. Therefore, it's for sure belonging to the husband. Because the house, the table's for the house, and the house is the husband's. But when you give the house, it's not double, that is a present in itself. And wherever you give a present in itself, that's used by both parties, the logic is that I'm giving it, really, is because of the relationship you have with my wife. Well, I'm giving a stranger half a house. I don't even know this son-in-law. I'm still giving him half a house because he has a connection with my wife, and therefore they're going to use it together, so I'm prepared to give it half the name and your name, half the name of them, because you're together a partnership. But as soon as the partnership breaks up, then of course I never gave it to you as an individual, I gave it to you as a couple, for both of you to use. A couple, if you're a couple, you can have it. If you're not a couple, then you can't have it. And therefore, that the difference between a ring and a table is not that a personal or household item. It's a logic behind it. If I give a ring, I'm giving a ring. Why am I giving a ring to a total stranger? I'm giving it because you have a partnership with my wife, with my daughter. As soon as there's no partnership, I gave it to a partnership. If there's no partnership, therefore there's no ring. So therefore a house I'm giving because of the partnership between the husband and wife. I'm not giving half a house to the stranger, I'm giving it because he has a partnership with my daughter. So as soon as the partnership is broken up, then it goes back. However, when you give a table and a chair to a house, yeah, I'm giving it over to the house use, to the household. As soon as it's for the use of the house. Now who owns the house? If the husband owns the house, he's in charge of the husband. It's given as a present to him, solely for him. That's called on him, and therefore doesn't come back.
No, it's not exactly the case here that he's giving it as a gift because of the ring. He's given the house so that his daughter gets married.
You're adding a factor. In our specific case, maybe it's different. But I'm saying without that factor, when a marriage starts up, a house is given to the couple, it's given to the couple because you have a partnership with my daughter. Therefore, it's understood. When the partnership breaks up, therefore the present level is given. So a non-partnership relationship breaks up, it goes back. That is what Rav Zalotzi wanted for Taina. fact, no, it's not comparable to giving jewelry to the color. That for sure stays for the color. That's a specific item for her use, it goes to her. Like an item which is given over to the couple because they are a couple, like a house, that comes back. Like we see from the Mabit, it comes back when the couple breaks up, because it was only given because they're a couple.
Well,
now, how does Rabbi Eliyashiv, Rabbi Eliyashiv didn't change his mind.
Before,
I'm going to let you speak in a second. How does Rabbi Eliyashiv say no? There's no proof on this Mabit at all, and I'm not changing my Pesach. For sure, the house doesn't go back. And you'll probably say a logic which maybe Rabbi Eliyashiv would say.
Was an enticement. He did it as an enticement, which means the Pharisee was doing it to be in his name after.
Okay, you're saying the same as Sam.
Yeah.
You're saying,
but there's no,
Rabbi Eliyashiv wants to say something general. You're saying a thing, a specific svara in Akkas.
I don't see
that. Even generally, where there's no svara like that, you still say the house which is given over to the chosen is considered as a presence which never goes back. It doesn't fit with this Mabit. No, it does fit with this Mabit. How does Rabbi Eliyashiv say this Mabit is not a steer to what he's saying? Case of the Mabit, you gave a ring, and we say it goes back. We give a ring which is used by both parties. He give a house which is used by both parties. No, that doesn't go back.
Because in the Mabit, he's not talking about going back. It doesn't go back according to, in any case, to the original giver. It stays with the one that was originally intended to give it to. He's dealing with who the original intention is. It doesn't go back to the one that gave the gift, ever.
Tazer lekale, it says the word tazor.
But it's not a chazorah, it's tazor lekale.
Tazor lekale.
Because he's saying it more
than that. It says tazor kala. Okay, I understand you've got a problem, I'll answer in a second. But anyone who's got.
I'll have a problem.
Yeah, the tazor means goes back. In other hands, it says
tazor. Because he's saying it belonged to the kala, he's got the gift.
Tazor, then you don't say tazor.
You can, because he's using it, she's using the marriage, letting her.
Okay, I'll explain that to that in a second. Anyone else got something sensible to say? What? Rav Yashiv says the house doesn't go back. And he said, we see the ring does go back. No, it's not comparable to the ring. Case.
The whole house or half the house?
The house which he gave. If he gave a whole house, it doesn't go back. Gave the half a house, it doesn't go back. A quarter of the house, it doesn't go back. Whatever he gave, it doesn't go back.
The house is
not
only clean, the house is the whole thing that they use.
No. It's something in the words of the Mabit, it says. This is a classic Rabbi Eliyashiv. Rabbi Eliyashiv reads the words very carefully, and he says, in the Mabit it says, no, you've got... No way is this a comparison to our case. You look at the Mabit words, it's got nothing to do with our case.
The ring is used by either of them, but not both of them together. It's a ring, it's either she's going to belong, he's going to belong. Depending on who gave it to her, they're going to have in mind for that relative to put it on. Whereas the house...
Not bad, but no. No.
Stum. The stum, it wasn't given stum.
Ah.
It's not given the house to both.
What? It must be a Talmud to Rabbi Yashiv.
He's not giving the house to both of them.
What?
He's not giving the house to both of them. He's giving them half the house each.
Ah, also good, but it was better said over here.
Okay.
It's okay, I'll repeat it. Okay. Dan said the right answer. Rabbi Yashiv said, the case of the Mabit! You're not reading it! The case of the Mabit was, a present was given! And it wasn't explained who was it given to. No one knew who it was given to. So we look. It's used by both parties. And it was given by the Kala's side. So we assume the present was given to the Kala and not to the Chosen. And therefore, at the end of marriage, it stays with the Kala. We assume it was never given to the Chosen. Because he never told us what he wanted. He just gave the present. It's used by both parties. Who do we assume he meant to give it to? Well, if it's a family of the Kala, we assume he meant it to the Kala. If it's a family of the Chosen, we assume they gave it to the Chosen. But here, in the case of the house, it's not that we don't know who he gave it to. He registered in the land registry, half to the Chosen, half to the Kala. He's definitely giving half the house to the Chosen. But for sure, sure that doesn't go back. We know what he meant. All my bits when we don't know what he meant. So therefore, says Rabbi Yashiv, for sure the house stays where it is. It's registered by his name and stays there, and you don't get it back. And therefore, that's how the Beis Din passes. They don't get it back. Yeah, but there's a difference, Rabbi Yashiv. He's the other Beis Din. Yeah. There was other reasons which they therefore agreed to Rabbi Yashiv, and the reason why the others agreed to Rabbi Yashiv, they said, we agree to all this love Natameh, because in this specific case, what did the father of the Kala give the house for? Why did he give half the house? Because of the partnership? That's why he gave the house? No, he said clearly, the father kind of said clearly, I'm giving this house because I know she's ready to divorce. No one's going to marry her. It'll be hard to marry her unless I entice somebody to marry her. So whoever marries her, I'll give them half the house. So therefore, he said specifically, it's not because of the partnership which I'm giving the house for. It's clearly because I'm giving you in exchange for taking my daughter. Therefore, their other Dayanim also agree in this specific case to Rabbi Yashiv that the house doesn't go back, like you suggested as his father before. Okay. Now, what do we pasken in Botzi Dinim? Do we go with Rabbi Yashiv or not? This is how Rabbi Yashiv pasken. The other Dayanim argued, and they disagreed in this specific case. How does other Botzi Dinim Lemaisa Noheg? What do they Noheg Lemaisa? So you want to know, it's a machlokas in Botzi Dinim. It's a machlokas in Botzi Dinim. In Bnei Barak, they look at it and they say, we have to look at the individual case each time. But the general rule, there are exceptions to the general, but the general rule is, first marriage, you get it back. Second marriage, it stays where it was given. Now what's the logic behind that?
Yes.
First marriage, even if it's registered in half the husband's name, it gets it back. Second marriage, it doesn't get it back. That's the general. There's obviously exceptions depending on the case. So that's the general. Why? What's the logic behind that type of look at the situation?
Because the father of Kala is much more desperate in the second marriage. He's willing to say, fine, keep it.
You're saying because it's desperate he's giving it, yeah? Anyone else got a...
So they're not passing really like Rabbi Yashiv.
No. Yeah, they're making this difference. Yeah, so what's the logic behind it? Anyone's got to say besides?
The first marriage, the father doesn't think the marriage is going to break up. The second marriage already knows better.
Correct. In the first marriage, they get married. Maybe things are unfortunately changing, but hopefully they change. First marriage, the expectation is it's going to last. I don't even think that there's going to be a break. So therefore, when I register it in the Chosin's name, I'm not giving it a present, I'm giving it because the marriage. And I don't think they're going to separate. So therefore, in the event something happens and they do separate it, I never really gave it as a present to the Chosin. I never thought they would separate. If I knew they would separate, I would never give it. When the second marriage is already second marriage. Second marriage is not so easy, it's difficult, and forget, most times they make monetary agreements before they enter in the second marriage. And still you gave the house in the half the person's name, without making clear to Noyim, that's for sure, without making conditions, that's for sure a permanent present, and you don't get it. Other Batei Din, especially the Yerushalayim that go with Rabbi Yashiv, you never get it back. Because of this machlokas, that when you come to write wills and things like that, or contracts, or getting married and things, prenuptials, you have to take that in consideration, the halakhic, what's going to be, if the property, if there's chas v'shalom a break up a marriage, who actually owns the property, who's actually has ownership in the event of death, who are you inheriting over, is the wife got the ownership, if the half the property is in her name, or the chosin's got the ownership, who, when one party dies, who actually owns it, and who is going to inherit, will make a big difference. Therefore, when you have clarity, you should write a will for both parties to cover these issues.
if there's a prenuptial agreement, that by definition means that they're looking at a prospect of possible
pregnancy. Yeah, yeah. It's not normal to do any prenuptial agreements in first marriage. But in first marriage, you should be clever enough to make a will which covers this situation. Both parties, the chosen and the kala. Chosen and the kala. That the property, even though it's registered in my name, may be considered the chosen, may be considered the husband's, and therefore, if it's considered the husband's, therefore I have to make sure that it's covered, that where I want it to go, will also he agree that it should go, and therefore the wills, both wills should be written. And similarly the other way around. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to our next case. Another case for Gates of Bechstein. Like, husband and wife been married 20 years. Things, midlife crisis, financial struggles, that's the clue usually. Up until recently, the reason why marriages, most marriages broke up, it starts with financial problems. And express. Yeah. So when you help somebody who's in financial problems, you're not only helping him, you're helping the whole house. Because that's where it starts. Most of the time. So financial problems arise, marriage problems arise, and therefore now's the break in the marriage. Half the house owns the husband's, but 10 years before, at the time of marriage, he owned the house. 10 years into marriage, he transferred half the house into the name of the wife.
Right.
Half the house in the name of the wife.
You know why?
I'll tell you what the facts are. Then, there's divorce. The husband is saying, look, I've got business. I have huge debts in my business. My only collateral to pay up the debts is the house. You, I've been supporting all the years through my business. So now, I have debts in my business. They have to be paid. I want the house to pay those debts. So therefore, I want the house to be sold, all the debts to be paid, and whatever's left, we split 50-50. The wife says, what's the connection of the business to the house? I own half the house. I have nothing to do with the business. You have a business which is in debt. Yes, you have a debt, so the debtors can go and claim from your assets. What's your asset? Half the house. So therefore, you can entitle to half the house, but my half the house, you cannot touch at all. So we can sell the house, half the money of the house comes to me, because I own half, and the other half goes to you, and you can do what you like. You pay your debts. You pay your debts with the half house. You can't use my half of my house to pay off your debts.
The debts arise before the house was changed title or after?
The debts arise mainly after that. Mainly afterwards.
Why did you remember the marriage? You decided to protect himself from his
presence. So that question was asked them basically. The wife said because he wanted to give a present to me. Wanted to give me security. In event something will happen to him, I at least have half the house in my name and don't have to worry about the children having giving me problems. Yeah. So he gave me half the house of security. My husband said, no, I only put half the house in her name to give me security. How does it give me security by putting half the house in my wife's name? How does it do that? That means gives me security for my debtors. That the debtors, when they want to chase, they got only half of my house to chase, and then they got the other half of the house, because the other half is under somebody else's name, called my wife. So, that's the claims, backwards and forwards. How do you look at that?
Are they calling each other liars, or it was never articulated between them?
Never articulated between them. It's how they interpreted the situation. So how do you look at it? How do you look at that halacha? Can those debtors halachically claim from the whole house, even the half which belongs to registered in the wife's name? So let's look at according to both opinions we said before. According to Rabbi Yashiv, a present is a present, while a house, or whoever's name it is, and then it belongs to. Can the debtors, therefore, of the husband's claim from the half the house of the wife? Can he claim? According to Elashim, half the house actually belongs to the wife. It never goes back. It stays by the wife. Can you ever claim the debtors of the husband claim anything from the half that belongs to somebody else?
Only if the debt arose before the
Can't claim? Okay. Now let's look at the other opinion. That it does go back. The other opinion says, no, it does go back. A present that's given does go back. Now what's the halacha? Can a debtor claim from a present which the husband gives, which eventually the husband's going to get back? Can the debtors claim now?
No.
Or not?
No. They can only claim it when it comes back.
Pardon? It goes back to the States. No, we said last week it was a present all the time that they were married, and when it goes back, it goes back.
In a situation like this, under what circumstances would it be a present? They lived there in the house. It belonged to him for 10 years. What way is it a present? What way did anything change?
You can, you have use of it and ownership of it during the lifetime. Any payers, let's for example, if there's any rent from such objects during the time of marriage, half of it will belong to the wife, even though it goes back after the marriage breaks up. That's an example. But that you're asking, what's the nafka mina? It causes that feeling. That's enough. So in this case, can the creditors claim? Even according to this opinion, can the creditors claim from a property which is in the wife's name but will eventually go back to the husband after the marriage breaks up? Can creditors claim?
You can only claim once it's back in the husband's possession.
Yeah, so look at the first number four. In Nosan Isto Habal Achan Asun Koten Shalova Kaka. If the husband gives to a wife after marriage, before he borrows money, land as a present, okay, the husband now doesn't have rights to the rent. The creditors of the husband cannot claim from the wife. So therefore, whether you hold like Rabbi Yashiv, or whether you don't hold like Rabbi Yashiv, those creditors of the husband can never get their debt from half the house which belongs to the wife. And whether it says a permanent present to the wife or temporary present to the wife, their creditors can never claim.
There's only one reason why I would say perhaps you shouldn't follow the Shulchanot in this case. Because it's very rare for a husband to give a wife half a house for security. It's very common to do it to protect himself from his creditors. So I would assume that was really
okay, but that's as far as praying out of it. So, till next week, you're going to think about why it's not necessary fitting with the Shulchanot which you just wear out. Why it could be very different. Yeah? You can think about it tonight.